Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, Tara Reid got herself a Christmas tree, decorated it, put pictures up, and she also retweeted a video that talks about her new bikini body, but it's a private video, so I don't really understand what she's doing with Twitter. How's it going?
That's the most Tara Reid thing of all time, I guess. You know?
Yeah, I was going through her feed looking for stuff, and it's like, one, if you compliment Tara Reid on how beautiful she is, she will retweet you. That's a certainty. And two, I love what she does with the multimedia aspect of it. It's fascinating.
Is her Christmas tree, does she have it all one color? Does it look professionally decorated, or does it look like a normal tree?
No, it looks normal. It looks like she did it herself. And like the picture she took was, it looked like she was at like a Christmas tree lot, although it was kind of tented over, but it looked like she legitimately went out and got a tree. So I don't know why. It's weird that I'm proud of her for doing that and not just having like a fake tree or having someone come do it professionally. But yeah, I'm proud of Tara Reid.
No, she's like a person. She's an actual person.
She's just like a person.
Just like a person. Have you guys gotten your tree yet?
We have a fake tree. Because it's just with the apartment and stuff. Like if we had a house, it would be I feel like I would have a regular tree. We always had a regular tree growing up, but the fake tree is just so much easier in an apartment.
It is. It's true.
Yeah, it's all decorated. It's got my Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, Grant Hill, Scottie Pippen ornaments. I have a Shaq ornament that I've refused to put up because I'm not proud of his post playing career so far. It's a little protest.
He hasn't been as bad.
No, that's true. I will say this. He's been much more measured this year.
Maybe he deserves to go on the backside.
I could do that. I can't next year because I just put the bins away back in storage. I don't find myself getting those out anytime soon.
Right.
Remember, I'm quite lazy.
Next year, you should put him on the butt. That'd be appropriate.
Yeah, I could do that. I could just swing him back and forth. He could be shacked in a fool on my Christmas tree all year round. You know who's not shacked in a fool?
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant is back. It wasn't pretty, but he's back. I was legitimately happy. The introductions are just, I don't even know how to describe how happy I was that they started playing Darth Vader's music, and it was so Kobe Bryant, and I mean that as both an insult and a compliment.
The video with Beware the Mamba, that was my favorite part.
Yeah.
After Beware the, they did something else for Nick Young, and I was like, that should be Beware the Swagferno. That should be that. And we will talk about Nick Young in a second.
Yes.
We'll get there. I know everyone's waiting to hear us talk about
it. We're only going to spend 35 minutes on Nick Young today, I promise. We're going to keep it somewhere between 35 and 65 minutes for Nick Young.
But yeah, just the whole production. And some people, I know, I'm sure that there are going to be sports writers that are like, you know, it's too corny and it doesn't do justice. And there's going to be people that are like, why do you have to make fun of it? Because they're just having fun. I'm like, I'm not making fun of it in a meme way. I'm not making fun of it as like, this is stupid and you shouldn't do it. I'm making fun of it as you did something ridiculous and I'm making jokes about it because it was ridiculous. That is what the NBA is about, is that.
Right. Exactly. There. It was absolutely for the fans. It was for Lakers fans. It was for Kobe fans. And in the process, it was hilarious. And that's probably the best of all worlds, right? Yep. Is they had this big like media lead up to the return, and then you have that moment, and then he got on the
video.
Court.
The video teaser.
The video, oh my God.
The jersey in the rain.
The all-weather jersey. It was more of an ad for Adidas jerseys than anything. look what this could withstand on your clothesline. Do people still use clothesline? I feel like there's got to be a portion of the world that still uses clothesline. Probably a significant portion.
Lots of people in Arkansas, I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with that.
That was amazing. That was, like, I get that maybe film school didn't work out for you. And and you found a gig doing media stuff for an NBA team. And hey, that's a great gig. Good job. You can move up. You can really do it. But like 2 minutes of a jersey in weather. 2 minutes. We have all these discussions all the time about just internally, like a little look behind the scenes of, you know, we want to keep videos, you know, in this range of time. We want post in this range of time or in this range of word count. You know, you got to keep the consumer interested, but it can't be too long because then you lose their interest and you want them to stay, you know, within the site and all this stuff. Like, that's just basic, like, website stuff for any company. And yet you dedicated 2 entire minutes to a jersey waving in weather. That's astonishing. I'm not mad. I think it's great, but it's hilarious.
I imagine the guy that came up with this idea coming home and, like, he's like a normal guy. Everyone thinks he's just, you know, he's got, like, slick back hair and looks very sharp, and he's got product in his hair and just, like, a good looking.
I mean, he's basically, dude. You're just describing Christian Bale from American Psycho.
Yeah, I am. I am definitely describing him as that way. And then he comes home and he opens the door. Good to be home. And he opens his door and it's nothing but Zack Snyder film memorabilia everywhere. Just the entire room is nothing but he's got the 300 action figures and Watchmen pillows. It's just, that's all it is. So Kobe didn't look good at all.
He looked very rusty. He forced a lot. The biggest thing I took away was his dribble was sloppy. And that's to be expected. He hasn't played in a very long time. He hasn't been at game speed. There's only so much you can do in practice. Like, I don't think you or I will take anything away from this other than he's back. But I guess there were a couple of good moments. I mean, I liked him in the facilitator role. I really liked that. And I think you and I talked about this last season when D'Antoni took over, of how can Kobe fit into that style of play. And he actually fit in beautifully last year. In terms of embracing the system, making passes, he probably forced it a little too much to I don't know how to put this in a better way, but to oddly not make the whole thing about him, to make it more team oriented with his comeback, and that was a mistake. He had like what 8 turnovers, but yeah. But I mean you saw good things, you saw a lot of bad things, you saw Kobe. He was back and he's got to work off the rust.
I thought it was interesting to see him. You're right that he was forcing it in terms of wanting to be the team facilitator. I kept wanting to see him. It was weird because I'm always the one telling him just to stop with the isolations all the time, but I really wanted to see him just take the guy. And instead, he was just damn near determined to play in the system and make the right pass. And, you know, he's talked about, like, I'm just excited for these guys because they all play and they all work so hard. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. Let's see what happens in March when his pass is bounced off of Robert Sacre's knees for the 15th time. Like, because that was my takeaway last night. I'm looking at those turnovers. I was like, yeah, some of it was really bad play by Kobe. Like, he just got the ball stripped or just got blocked or whatever. Some of it's that he's passing to Robert Sacre, Wesley Johnson, and whatever's left of Pau Gasol. That's kind of part of it.
You know what? You know what? Followers in Spain do not like you saying. Is that Kobe would be having a better game if he wasn't passing to Pau Gasol's corpse. I tweeted that. That did not go over well in Spain. I can tell you that.
Spain did not enjoy that.
No. I need to start, like, putting out pictures of Ricky Rubio to get back in their good graces.
Exactly. Get back into Spain's good graces. Yeah, man, Pau. Oof. We'll table Pau for a while longer, but...
Yeah.
I had a lot of Lakers fans being like, this is going to be a career year for him. You watch. And I was like, I don't know. I saw him last year, and that is not the same dude.
Yeah, I think it'll be somewhere more towards the middle of what we saw last year and what they've expected of him this year. Maybe more on the side of what we saw last year, because I just don't know how you can ask him to be consistent with the way his body is right now. Right? Like, that's asking a lot.
I know that there are guys... Here's the thing. It makes it more unbelievable when Tim Duncan has a year like he did last year, when Kobe Bryant had a year like he did last year, when these guys have these remarkable years later in their career.
Yeah, like when Kevin Garnett – oh, never mind. Your examples are fine.
Like before Kevin died, yeah. That's it's really impressive. But for every one guy that you throw at me at that age, I've got an Elton Brand for you. Like,
yes.
it just goes. It's not their fault. The body just goes. It's natural.
It's a lot of punishment. It's a lot of punishment. It's a lot of stress to put on a body for that long.
You're jumping up and down on your feet every single day. I somehow have – I've sustained this foot injury from wearing boots. That's all I have. I wore boots, and now I have this like, pretty not insignificant foot injury – and hurts like hell. Like, I could not play on this at all.
I feel like you've officially removed yourself from the best athlete in the world conversation with this.
I have. The boot hurts. So, yeah, anyway, so it just goes. I thought Kobe did a really good job of wanting to get into the flow of the offense. I did notice one thing. He talked about how he liked his explosiveness, and I was like, yeah, you know, he kind of had that step. Like, the ankle looked okay. The problem is, for me, whenever I watch NBA, and I don't know this for a fact, this is my observation. There's two steps to an explosive move. You've got the initial step, which is what you need. If you don't have that, you're screwed. If you don't have that, you're any number of guys that just don't, like OJ Mayo doesn't have the explosive first step.
Right.
Can't. Doesn't have it. And that's awesome. Tony Parker has, and the elite point guards, they have about three of them, but the most crucial one is the second one once you get to about the free throw line. It's you get around your man, and then the defense is closing on you, and it's your ability to get to the rim before the defense closes. And I noticed last night that Bryant was able to get the first step, but then they were able to catch back up with him.
Yeah, no, I
And
completely agree. And I think the best evidence of that, and he adjusted and made the play. But the best evidence of that was that crossover he had against Landry Fields near the top of the near the free throw line, and he has the first step on him. He gets the crossover, and then the defense starts to come over. And I think normally Kobe would just go around that guy. He would go around that helping defender, and he would be at the basket. But I think you could kind of see it wasn't there, and he passed it off to Powell, and Powell scored, and it was a great play. It was a great highlight, but I think that play is exactly evident of what you're talking about.
I could definitely see him. I mean, I made the comment last night, like, Jordan shot horribly in his first game back, just horribly. And everyone's like, yeah, but Jordan wasn't coming back from injury, too. And I was like, yeah, I'm mostly just thinking of it from the perspective of if you haven't played an NBA game in a long time, turns out it's kind of hard to just jump right back in.
Yeah. That's that you can do, like, just talking to guys, like, you can do all the training you want, but until you're in game speed action, it's just not the same. It's really not. And I don't know how to ever describe it other than relaying what players have told me. Because you and I will never, I mean, we could take a week off of writing and get back in. It's like, oh, typing can still, I can still type. It's fine. It's not like there's no way we can relate to that.
And one, and it's funny too because this is a common one of the common misconceptions about the NBA. Like, the casual fan gets lost in the fact that it seems slow, but in reality, it's that the players are so actually fast and precise with their movements that they're not out of control.
Oh my God, I got to see LeBron up close Saturday night because he was here,
Ugh.
and he's a shapeshifter.
There's nothing like it.
It's unreal. I mean, watch him on TV and he's damn impressive on TV, but watch him in person, like you kind of forget how big he is and how quickly he moves at that size, and it's like the game is so fast and there's so many split second decisions and coming off. You know, that kind of rust and that kind of injury. And also, I mean, Kobe looks heavy. Like, I think he's like 220 or something like that. And, you know, usually he's around 205, 210. And that's coming because he had an Achilles injury. You can't exactly do cardio all the time when you have an Achilles injury. So I think he'll shed the weight in the next month or so. But I think that also added to the sloppiness. He's probably not used to playing at whatever weight he's at.
And you know, he could have a huge game next game. It could be a month. It could be fine. You know, there's a lot of reasons to think that he'll be fine. I'm not saying that it's impossible that he's not, that this isn't going to be harder than he expected either. It's possible that this could even surprise him. And he's actually been really honest about the fact that I think he even thought maybe this wouldn't be as, I think early on after the surgery, he was like, oh, I'll have surgery. You know, I'll get through it. I'll be back. And the difference is that Achilles, it does change the way you move. It just, there's, he talked about the uncertainty. That I think has got to be the crappiest part, is not being able to trust your body.
Yeah. That, I mean, especially when you're used to your, I mean, your body just carries you through these unbelievable moments of like, how does he get enough space over two defenders falling out of bounds to get off a good shot and knock it down? It's 'cause his body allows him to, you know? And he's not going to have that for a little while. Or at least he's not going to have it consistently.
I mean, and Kobe's a story, and that's, we've talked about that, and I think we've done a good job. I do want to say Amir Johnson was fantastic last night.
God, he just destroyed.
just I've really come around on him. He's so good. He's so fantastic. I kind of want him traded, but I kind of don't want him to, because he loves it in Toronto and Toronto loves him. I'm always like, if it's a player like that, I'm always like, oh, imagine how good he'd be on Dallas. Like, you know, I'm always looking at that. Look at what if you took like a veteran good guy and put him in a position to really make a difference. One guy that made a difference last night.
Oh, baby. Oh, my God.
Okay, for those of you that haven't seen it, we haven't actually posted it. We should have. I think we were just both too stunned. Young catches a pass on the baseline.
I guarantee he made up his decision to do this before he caught the pass.
He catches it in the right corner. I think Fields is the one who closed.
Yeah.
He goes around. There's three defenders closing in on him, and Nick Young attempts a 720 spinning layup reverse.
He could have gone for a dunk on the strong side of the basket, right?
Yep. Yep. That's what I thought he was going to do. I thought he was just going to dunk it. I thought he was going to be one of those really quick two-hand bloop.
It was
the greatest shot in NBA history.
We talked about this a lot. I fawned over the Ray Allen three to save game six, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I call it the greatest shot I've ever seen. The greatest shot in NBA history. And I truly believe that. Up until I saw Nick Young drive baseline last night.
It was undeniably the greatest miss of all time.
Easily the greatest miss of all time. And the thing is, like, people started, like, posting videos of Nick Young doing stuff. And there's one where it's, like, against the Lakers, he was on the Wizards. And he goes for, like, a breakaway layup, and it goes over the backboard. Like, he lost it. He just lost the handle on it. And people are like, oh, see, this is Nick Young. It's like, no, that's the ball slipping out of your hands. This was a decision to spin baseline 360 against two defenders when you could have just gone up for an easy shot. That is totally different. The ball
reverse.
Reverse. The ball slipping out of your hands versus deciding to do a 360 layup against a defender. Those are two different things. That's like comparing apples and, you know, tanks.
It's interesting because they've managed to make this team with these players. D'Antoni has gotten them to be just good enough to where they're entertaining, so it's forgivable. Like, if you're the Wizards and you see if he was telling the Wizards and he did that, like, fans would just be like, why do we pay this guy? Why? Why is he on this team? But Laker fans are kind of like, oh, that's swaggy. So precocious.
I didn't even know how to react. Like, I think I just tweeted like something like amazing and like no caps. Like, I just I imagine it's like when the 86-year-old woman in South America is making breakfast for her family, and through the toast she sees the Virgin Mary, like. Somehow she sees this figure on a piece of toast of the Virgin Mary, and she just has this incredible religious experience, and just all emotion leaves her body, and there is no reaction. It's just that it's this euphoric bliss of nothingness, like time stands still. That's how I felt when he started spinning.
So the scene in Amadeus where he's describing music that they parodied on How I Met Your Mother, which is on Mondays, it's on CBS.
Yep.
Where it's like the most delightful, playful little spin in midair, and then the flick of the wrist as it carries over the backboard. It's just unbelievable. I've watched the GIF 50 times, and I don't get tired of it. It never stops being entertaining to me.
No, how could it stop
highlight show in the country last night.
Oh my God. And he was like, he was good. I mean, he was their leading scorer. But he seemed to embrace the moment more than anybody.
Well, I don't know if good was the word I would use.
Oh, he was. You take away that layup, he was 7-15. I don't even know if that should count as a shot attempt. That should just count as like that should count as 10 points. They really lost this game by two.
Yeah, that's I'm really gonna love Kobe's reactions to his teammates once he gets back.
It's not even his teammates. It's just Nick Young.
I don't know, because they're starting Robert Sacre and.
That can't last.
Jordan Hill's got to be like, what in the name of God do I have to do?
I am not a Jordan Hill fan. I think yourself, I think others completely over... Not completely. I think you guys overvalue him. There is absolutely no reason Robert Sacre should ever get a minute of playing time instead of Jordan Hill. Jordan played 20 minutes last night. He should have played 30. He should have gotten all 10 minutes of Robert Sacre's minutes.
I do have a pretty strong stat on Jordan Hill, I found. Of players that have 8 rebounds per game, he has the highest percentage of contested ones.
Okay.
So he is, he really is battling as much as it seems like he is.
He's not bad.
There are guys that look like they're fighting hard, but actually aren't.
I used to think
Hill actually does fight that hard.
Yeah, I used to think he was bad. He's not bad. I'll relent on that. Like he's not bad. I just don't think he's very good. But he's a nice role player.
You know who could be a nice role player?
Yeah, you know what? I wouldn't trade that Nick Young shot for anything in the world. You know who did get traded?
Even better. Even better transition. So long, Rudy. Take care.
Are you surprised that they traded him this early in the season?
No. I think Masai would have taken any deal he could have gotten the day he took. Like, as soon as he's putting his pictures of his kids up in his office, and he would have been cementing that deal. Like, the ball thing, the kinetic energy thing that goes back and forth, well, he's putting that up.
Yeah.
You know? The inspirational posters, only his just says trade, the only way out of bad situations.
Think he has that hang in there cat poster, and he's just like photoshopped Brian Colangelo's face on it? By the way, if we don't have a listener photoshopping that by the end of today, I'm going to be very, very disappointed in all of you.
So Pete D'Alessandro, who worked with Ejiri in Denver, did this deal. Well, he's the GM that did it. The question is whether or not – I know that there are people involved in the organization. The power structure in Sacramento is kind of interesting. It's one of those –
it's odd, yeah.
There are a number of these organizations from people I've talked to that whoever's in charge depends on who you ask.
Right.
And Sacramento is one of those. I don't necessarily think this was like Pete D'Alessandro didn't want it. I'm sure everyone signed off, but just that I don't know for a certain whose idea this was. And the construct is, my opinion is, if he opts out, it's an awesome deal. If he doesn't, it's an okay deal. If they re-sign him to an extension, it's a terrible deal for Sacramento.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think – I mean, I gave – people were angry at the grade I gave. I gave an incomplete grade last
night. Shocking.
I gave an incomplete grade because I just thought, like, this is clearly a move that is setting up other moves for this roster. And, God, I think in our last episode we talked about the Kings, or maybe a couple episodes ago. Sometime last week, you and I talked about the Kings and, like, D'Alessandro hasn't had that much time with this roster, and it's going to take some time to overhaul, you know, the mess that was there. And this is kind of starting to do that. Like, you've weeded out a few role players. Now, Patterson, you and I both think is much better than he's played, right? I mean, you're higher on him than I am, but like we both agree he's a very good role player.
Yeah,
and he struggled. So, all right, that you don't really need him. In that case, and you just trade for Derek Williams, it's kind of a weird fit. And you have Carl Landry. That's the thing. They still have Carl Landry to put in the fold. So there's a position, you know, logjam there. You have Isaiah Thomas emerging, so Greaves Vasquez doesn't make a lot of sense. Nobody wants John Salmons, so that's fine. Chuck Hayes, I actually like Chuck Hayes on the team, and I'd like him being around DeMarcus Cousins, but whatever. Like, you can find other veterans to do that.
Well, It's kind of one of those things where you like DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, you like Chuck Hayes, but there's only so much that Chuck Hayes can do with DeMarcus Cousins. Like, there's only so much of an impact he can make.
Right, exactly.
And from there, you're looking at if they'd shot out of the cannon, if they'd start off and they were shocking, and they were like, look at the surprising Kings, then Chuck Hayes becomes really valuable. At 4-13 or wherever they're at, he has very little value. You don't need him.
Right. So
it's very little value for the Raptors. They don't need him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just don't really think they gave up a whole lot for a potential short term checkup of, hey, where is Rudy Gay? And Tom Ziller at SB Nation had a fantastic look at Rudy Gay before the shoulder injury, after the shoulder injury, when he has a high usage rate, when he doesn't have a high usage rate, and how he shoots the ball, and kind of made the point of, look, DeMarcus Cousins leads the league in usage. Isaiah Thomas has a very high usage rate. Even Ben McLemore has a high usage rate. You know, there's only so much to go around. Rudy Gay may, you know, they may run isolation stuff and embrace the kind of player he's been the last couple of years, or they may, you know, kind of cut his time. And we've seen when his usage is lower, he's a much more effective player. So there is kind of this, there are signs that show you this could work out. There's also a lot of evidence the last 2 years that show, like, well, this is kind of a stupid thing to commit that kind of money to him.
Yeah.
And that's why it's incomplete for me, because I think that, I don't think you look at this trade and say, all right, the Kings have figured out where their roster is going.
And Zach Lowe over at Grantland has quotes from GM basically saying that they won't give him more than the mid-level exception. And if that's what his agent surveys and finds, he's definitely opting into the $19 million next year, and then it's tough for Sacramento. Zach is about a zillion times more connected than I am. The very few people I've talked to, two different GMs have actually told me he's really underrated. They still believe that they still think you cannot find guys with his ability to create shots.
Well, that's
finding that skill is very difficult.
That's the thing, and that's kind of what we talked about, I feel like, with Monte Ellis joining the Mavericks, is there is a huge difference between acquiring production and acquiring talent. Rudy Gay clearly has talent. Like, he's a very talented player. It's harnessing that to get production out of it. And, it just seems like, all right, he has not been able to hit a jumper in 2 years, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's been bad. And that's when the shoulder injury happened, was 2 years ago, as Tom Zeller pointed out. And so there's that fact. But I feel like so many people are focused on the money committed to him. The money committed to him over the next 2 years, or this season and next season, it doesn't really matter to Sacramento, nope. Right? I mean, it's not like they're going to be players in free agency anyway this season.
I mean, look, if they get Andrew Wiggins, you think they're keeping Rudy Gay?
No, absolutely not. If they get Jabari Parker or Julius Randle, they're not keeping him, you know? Yeah. I mean, yeah, he'll opt in for $19 million next year and he'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy makes $19 million. And then after that, what does it matter?
Yeah. I am a little bit worried about, there's been a lot of talk about, they're going to play Derek Williams at the three and Rudy at the four in a combo forward situation. And I'm kind of like, ooh, I don't know about that. That makes me nervous.
That's weird. I mean, I think that I just still don't know enough about what they're running and what their system is. Right. They might not even know, but I guess if in Mike Malone's ideal system, the two forward spots are kind of just interchangeable. I mean, obviously there will be some matchup based when you go against a big lineup. Like, you're not going to throw Rudy Gay in there against Zach Randolph,
right.
But there will be some situations where that'll be a problem. But maybe the two forward spots are just, you guys are forwards. You're a power forward and you're a small forward. So then maybe it can work. But yeah, that does seem. That seems like a weird idea to me.
And then there's the there's that element. I mean, my thing, I wrote about this morning with Hickory High, had a great graphic that showed Rudy's on pace for the most games with under 50% shooting in NBA history with a certain number of attempts.
That seems like a lot to have the most.
It's not a great stat to have on your sheet.
In NBA history.
That's not something that I think his agent's going to be spitting out there.
That's almost 70 years.
That's a long time to not shoot over for 50%.
Yeah.
I made the comment that, and I believe this about most forwards in his position, if you're hyper-athletic and you struggle being a number one guy, but you have undeniable athleticism and a great talent set, go be Sean Marion. I don't understand why more guys don't do this.
Absolutely. Like,
Sean Marion has made so much money, has been so successful, and is loved by teammates, despite all of his like attitude problems in Phoenix, which are largely because he wanted to be the number one option. But he was at his best in Phoenix because he focused on defense, rebounding, playmaking, and then make the shots that you're given. And yep. If Rudy would commit to that, he'd be fantastic. You don't need the ball. This is a huge thing in the NBA in the way it's evolved. I think that there's going to be a time when it's going to switch back around. And we whether it's you and I or guys younger than us are going to be arguing, you need to create with the ball more. I think the time's going to come. Right now, with the way that the systems are and with the way that the players are built, with where the league is, if you are not undeniably great with the ball, if you're not Kyrie Irving – well, you're not even Kyrie Irving right now. But if you're not Chris Paul, LeBron James in that tier, go work off ball.
Yeah, because you see guys making a lot of money off that. I mean, not – not $19 million a year, but the fact that Steve Novak gets what, 4 or 5 a year? That's kind of incredible. Steve Novak isn't a good NBA player, but he finds his role and he fits it.
My thing with Rudy Gay has always been this. I do not understand why he does not rebound or assist more. He has the ability to do both. He doesn't have wonderful vision. He's not a point forward. He's not a point guard. I'm just saying he can be a guy that racks up a lot of assists by making smart plays.
I imagine it would be a lot like the movie Celtic Pride, where he starts passing in game 7 of the finals and just starts hitting teammates in the head because they're not expecting it.
Exactly. And then, you know, and the same thing with this rebounding. I don't understand. He could be a monster rebounder. He's a good defender. I got to say this. I hate this talk that he's not a good defender. It's crap.
He's a solid, solid defender.
He could be better. But the reason I think he could be better is because he wastes too much of his damn energy on offense trying to create mid-range jump shots.
Right.
Makes me crazy.
And I think that, to your point of playing off ball more, I don't think the Kings brought him in so that he can be the number one option. They're still going to run – like, they're setting up good or bad.
They give Cousins that money to have him play off ball.
Good or bad, they are setting up to make this DeMarcus Cousins franchise. Yep. And there is going to be a lot of maturity that needs to be harnessed there. But he is going to be the guy on the court. And so I think Rudy's going to have to learn how to adapt. And if he learns how to adapt over the next year plus and shows that, maybe Sacramento doesn't do it, but some team will say, well, this guy's willing to do what it takes. He has that talent. He has that athleticism. Let's go give him some money.
And that man is Chris Grant.
That's how he's going to save his job.
You know, and there's lots of indication that this is not the case, but the Cavs signing Rudy Gay when they miss on LeBron sounds like the most logical, common sense thing I can imagine from a GM that wants to save his job by making an immediate move.
And what would be great is if there's a tampering scandal of Chris Grant sometime in March is like, hey, Rudy, I know I'm not allowed to talk to you about this, but if you opt out this year, I will give you a lot of money.
And then the league's like, do you want to press charges for tampering? And Sacramento's like, no,
we're good. Do you want any compensation? No, we're fine.
No. Can we trade him now? Is that something we can do? Because we'll do it now.
I can just imagine the Kings front office is like, are we allowed to be in the same division as Cleveland? Like, no, we just couldn't swing that. They're like, okay, no, we're good then. They can just have it.
We're good. They just wanted to check. Oh, man. Yeah. For Toronto, they're reportedly shopping Kyle Lowry to – it's fire sale at Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment.
Yep.
All weekend long.
The best
deals. Discount prices.
The best deals in town.
You know, buy one, get one Landry Fields free.
Man, there was a good 4 months where he was a player.
I'm trying to think if there's a player. I think he'll keep Valanciunas. I'm not even necessarily sure that Valanciunas is untouchable.
I guess it would depend on what someone is willing to give up for him, right?
Like, if you're willing to take Landry Fields, I think besides that, you'd be like, is there a pick?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, if you offered up your 2014 pick,
yeah,
unprotected, for Valanciunas, I think he would do it because, let's just say, somehow they land 2 top 5 picks because of this deal. Why wouldn't he say, I'll roll it with Joel Embiid, him and one of the star forwards. I'll go with those two guys.
Especially because very quietly, Valanciunas has not really been all that good this year. There are moments when he's great and I really like a lot of what I've seen out of him, but he hasn't been. They thought he was going to be back to the basket, impact player both ends, and he's coming too high up in pick and roll coverage. His rotations have been good, but there are times when he gets lost. His post play is decent, but not exceptional.
Yeah, I think he's still adjusting to the speed of the game in terms of, like, he just looks like he's thinking a little too long out there instead of reacting. And
he has not been undeniably good.
No, I love what I've seen out of him. I really do. Like, I think the potential is there to be an all-star center, and I think he likely will be within 5-6 years or something like that, but you can't just say like, oh, he's bowled us all over with his play.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, obviously Terrence Ross isn't on that list. You know, Amir Johnson has so much trade value.
You could get a lot for him. Yeah, I mean, not only not only is he playing well and he would fit in with any contender, he doesn't make a lot, and his contract isn't guaranteed for next year. Like, you could get out of it if you needed to take a luxury tax hit this year and then be under next year.
So, you know, they're going to have options. There's going to be more moves. I'm excited to see what he does with that. I wrote last night, though, it is very important. We've seen that Ujiri is great at tearing teams down or getting value for what he trades. I don't have any idea what he wants. I don't know what he wants to do.
I think he just wants freedom.
Hey, he wants the ability. I know that. He wants the options. He's great at doing that. But at some point, you have to translate options into decisions.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know? And then I think that's the thing with the Jazz, right? Is they had lots of options. They chose an option, and now we have to see whether or not.
Yeah, and now their next big decision is what they get out of the draft and then where they go from there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know. And that's just, it's impossible to know until we know what pick they're picking, you know, what pick.
And this shows you how this stuff is all interconnected, because you know, you and I battled last year over whether or not they should have traded Millsap and Jefferson.
Yeah.
But they cleared their ranks, let those guys go. If they tank out and get a top three pick, and that pick winds up working out for them and they build a contender, they did the right thing.
Yeah. What's funny is I don't think you or I will actually have an answer of who was right about that for like another 4 years.
Yeah, it's going to take 4 years to know how that worked out.
That's the thing about this Rudy Gay trade, is people are just like, I just think you have to look and be like, it's kind of like last season at the trade deadline, I did that idea of like, oh, let's see what we said last trade deadline and re-review the trades, right? And even then, like, there are no answers. Like, some of this stuff, some of these trades have implications 3-4 years down the road. And it's really hard to know how to feel about a trade. I mean, you can have your initial feelings and be like, all right, this is what I think right now. But you got to be open for interpretation that 2 years from now, this could look like a great trade. Or 2 years from now, it could look like one of the dumbest trades in history. Like, you just don't know.
I think a lot of it with Sacramento is just that people really underrate how screwed up that roster was because of the Maloofs.
Oh, my God. That entire organization. I mean, Jesus.
It's, I mean, just from the, you know, Vivek brought in all new guys and they've really redone the organization, and I'm sure they're going to, you know, bump up Arco. I mean, they're getting the new arena and everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, just looking at the roster, it's like, they, you know, and they got really good value on McLemore. I didn't like it because they have a million guards, but McLemore is the best one of their guards.
Right.
Besides Isaiah Thomas.
Right.
You know, Marcus Thornton's been awful. So, you know, they're also reportedly looking to move Jason Thompson, which I think is really smart.
Oh, I think he's got a lot of trade. I'm huge on him. I've said for a couple of years now, like, I can see him being the third big on a team like Dallas, on a team like San Antonio, any team in Texas. I could see him being a third pick. I think the world of him as a role player.
I got a trade suggestion, actually.
Yes, I'm in.
We want him on a better team, but this one I think fits pretty well. What if you put him on Charlotte?
Ooh, I love that.
Al Jefferson, Jason Thompson. Thompson takes over the defensive load, focuses on defense and rebounding.
That I love.
And then if you don't move Hendo, you got, you know, Kemba. Who's their shooting guard? Yeah, Kemba, Hendo, MKG, Thompson, Jefferson.
Yeah, I love that idea.
And they've got extra picks. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, he's a solid, like, per 36. He's a solid 11-9 guy.
Yeah.
You could, and he's a, I think he's a good enough defender. I think you put him in a good scheme, he'll be a really good defender. He's a little slow on decision making, but I just think there's so much to work with there.
I mean, good God Almighty! Imagine if he played for the Knicks, how much better the Knicks would be.
It'd be weird for them to have a big man.
So I thought they were fixed. I thought they turned a corner.
I mean, you know how hard it is if you're the home team. How hard it is to go into Madison Square Garden and play a Celtics team that is led by Jordan Crawford. We've all talked about that old proverbial game of how do you win that game if you're the home team.
Look, I was wrong about the Celtics. I give in. I'm done.
No, this is more me making fun of the Knicks. How do you lose that home game by? I mean, it was.
They were down like 50 at one point.
It's unreal.
I mean, they're not just bad. They're not just bad. And then after the game, everybody but Melo was like, you know, I think we played all right. And the reporters are like, are you kidding? Like, I really want photos from the media sessions because I really this like the pack because I just want the looks on these New York reporters' faces when Raymond Felton's like, they just made shots. Reporters like, you lost by 50. What are you talking about? They just made shots.
You couldn't force.
That's what you got.
You couldn't force Jordan Crawford into one bad pass, one dribble off his foot, one throwing the ball at the shot clock. Like you couldn't get him to do what he had zero turnovers. Zero turnovers for Jordan Crawford in 30 minutes of play in which he's handling the offense. That is not them just making shots.
I don't know how Woodson still has a job. I'm honestly stunned that he hasn't been fired this morning. It may break during this podcast.
That's true.
Like, I have no idea how they have not fired. How do you not fire him after that? Like, I like Mike, and I hate overreacting to individual losses, and it's one game, and yada, 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 and they just won two, but, I mean, you cannot have that loss at home. You cannot. There are certain things you cannot have happen to you.
Is there...
They were 500, sure, but...
Is there any way... I mean, we talked about this with Sterling for years, and there is a way, apparently, but is there a way to make the Knicks a legitimate contender as an organization? I'm not talking about with this core. I'm just saying in general, with James Dolan as your owner. Is there any way to do it?
I think so. You have to have... I think you have to have a really dynamic, charismatic GM.
How do you get him to do that, though? How do you get him to hire that guy?
I think he wants to, because he wants to make... I will give you the answer. I will give you... who was the last GM to have sustained success in New York?
Pat Riley? Was Pat Riley their GM?
Well, he was the guy who was in charge.
Yeah, he was the guy making decisions.
Right? So, you take Riley, what's the closest contemporary to Pat Riley?
Other than David Kahn, I can't think of anybody.
It's Phil. That's it.
Yeah.
If he brings on Phil, Phil will, you know, and he'll clash with Phil, but he'll always respect him because he knows what he's done.
Well, that's the thing. I think the current guys have kind of cowered in a way or just given up, and Phil wouldn't do that.
This is one of the big issues with I think a lot of the GMs is the owners always are just like, well, what have you done?
Right.
I liked you in your interview, but what have you done?
Right.
Versus Phil Jackson, it's always, well, he is able to just slam those championship rings down the table and be like, that's what I've done.
Yeah.
It's undeniable. As much as it's count the rings, like owners operate and count the rings because they're not involved in day-to-day operations. They just want the results.
Right.
Which is a terrible way to do business, but that's the reality of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like the best ownership is like, no, my guys, like that's what's, you know, and they haven't won a championship and that's true, but Leslie Alexander's had a massive amount of success owning the Rockets because he trusts Daryl Morey.
Yeah.
He's just like, no, my guy's smart.
I mean, you look at Herb Simon in Indiana, they've trusted that regime, whether it was Larry Bird or Donnie Walsh or whoever, like whoever took over, they've been like, okay, we trust you. Like it's the same reason why everyone, I mean, you talk to anybody in that organization, everyone loves and backs Frank Vogel for two reasons. One, Frank Vogel is a great coach and a really fun guy to talk to. And two, they just believe we should trust this plan. And it's worked out so far, right? And the crazy thing is it's weird to have that trust within an organization because I'm just going to assume that to get that rich, to be able to have that kind of a business, you got to have an ego. You know?
You want to do games?
Let's do games.
The Clippers are on the road. They're in Philadelphia tonight. The line's jumped. It's now up to 9.5. The Clippers are favored by 9.5 on the road in Philadelphia.
Is Michael Carter-Williams still poisoned by Sam Hinkie?
We
all know that happened, right? Like, that's not just us making jokes. Like, that had to have happened. How do you get a bacterial infection in your knee? That's Sam Hinkie.
He's feeling better, apparently. He's still sore. I don't think he's going to play tonight.
Yeah. You gotta take the Clippers. What was it, 9.5?
Yeah, I'm nervous about this one. I took all favorites tonight, and I'm really nervous because one, I took all favorites, and two, it's the injuries, I guess, is the big thing. It's JJ Redick. They lost Reggie Bullock over the weekend, and they're out Matt Barnes. They're looking at Steven Jackson.
Yeah,
that's always a concern.
A team with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes on the same team.
Well, I was trying to think. I was like, do they need a backup point guard? Ooh, Collison gets hurt, then he'll get boom. And sure. What, Baron Davis?
Sure. Yeah, he looks like he's in shape.
Baron Davis? and Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. They can't get Monta, so it won't be a real reunion. But then they can go get Andres Biedrins. I'm sure the Jazz will give him up.
Why not?
We believe, baby. We believe with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It'll be the We Believe team meets Lob City. It'll be perfect.
Yeah, it'll be like a We Believe 15-year high school reunion where everyone's like, oh my god, the athletes are all out of shape now.
What happened? Denver is finishing up their road trip. They only got two games this week. Pretty impressive, actually. They had a really good run.
I've been damn impressed with them on this road trip.
I think they're 3-2 on the East Coast road trip. Finishing up, they're in D.C. where they're favored by 1 point over the Washington Wizards.
I'm going to go with the Wizards. I have no idea why. I think maybe because it's towards the end of the road trip. The thing is, I can't explain why the Wizards are so good without Bradley Beal right now.
I thought so, and then they lost to Cleveland.
Yeah, that was weird.
But this, the Wizards are yet another East team that make me crazy. I'm just like, what is wrong with you guys?
Did they lose to the Bucks too?
Yeah.
All right, maybe I'm rethinking this.
Yeah, they lost to the Bucks. That's right. That was the Chris Middleton game.
The Chris Middleton game.
I'm serious. He had like 27 points. It was I wouldn't have believed it if I didn't have watched it. I watched it.
There's a guy that, for some reason, trusts me with fantasy basketball information all the time. So he'll just ask me random questions like almost every day on Twitter. And one of them was, should I believe in Chris Middleton? I just said no. I didn't give him an explanation. I just said no. I like Chris Middleton, but no, he's not going to do that.
He's starting. He's starting, and he torched the Wizards.
And
just
weird, they're the worst team in basketball.
Ripped them apart.
I don't know whether
I think Ariza's back tonight. He had an ankle injury.
Yeah.
Webster had an ankle injury. I think Webster's out, but I'm not certain.
I'm going to go with the Wizards. I honestly don't have a reason why. I'm just confused by them, so I'll go with them.
I'm going with Denver, but I don't like this one either.
Yeah. I have no feeling for this game.
I wrestled with this one too. Golden State's on the road. They're in Charlotte. They're 5.5 point favorites.
These Bobcats are scrappy.
They're tough as nails, man. They just don't quit.
5.5 is almost too many points. I'm gonna go Warriors, but this is another one I don't like.
Yeah, I can definitely see this one that being back and forth with the Bobcats trailing for most of the game. Like they just can't put them away.
Yeah.
And then the Bobcats, you know, they pull within four, and then they hit one of two free throws and lose by five. Like, I could definitely see that happen.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies opened up at 11.5. It's down to 9. The Grizzlies are favored by 9 over the Magic tonight. Magic on back-to-back.
Is Vucevic back?
Don't know. Good question.
Vucevic and Jameer Nelson have been out, right?
Yeah. Jameer played last night.
Oh, Jameer played, right. Yeah. I'll go Memphis. If Vucevic was playing, I'd probably go... Oh, I definitely go Orlando.
I'm going Memphis only from the pissed off, just lost, just took a bad loss, and they've been injured, and they're going to want to take it out on somebody.
Yeah.
Like,
and this Orlando team is just beat up enough to allow that.
Memphis does this where they win, and they look pretty good, and then they lose a really bad game badly, and they get really pissed off, and they come back, and they stomp somebody. And
yeah.
That's how they've been. They're wildly inconsistent. Portland Trail Blazers, who finally lost a game against a major opponent, dropped a back-to-back game at home to the Mavericks.
That was a fun game.
That was.
Oh my god.
They're in Utah. They're 7-point favorites.
I don't need the spread. They just hit like 100 threes against the Jazz. I'll go Portland.
Yeah, I chose the Jazz last time, so I'm just out of principle because I felt so stupid doing that.
I'm sure there's a revenge factor where, hey, we're not going to give up 17 of 23 from three-point range this game.
Right.
But, yeah, I'll take Portland.
Especially, it's single-digit. It's only 7. So. Yeah. And this one, I don't know. This one hasn't moved, and I'm really – I don't know what's going on. Dallas is in Sacramento tonight. Dallas is not on a back-to-back. And they're only favored by 4.5 versus Sacramento, who's going to be without Patrick Patterson, without Chuck Hayes, without John Salmons. I know that John Salmons has been bad, but he's a body.
Yeah.
And then they get and Vasquez, and that Rudy Gay's not going to play.
Ooh, this means Jimmer plays, right?
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh, do I go for the Jimmer cover? Oh, hell, why not? I'll go for the Jimmer cover.
Okay.
It's a horrible pick. Just, I mean, I might as well just say, just mark me down for a loss tonight.
I was 6-8 over the weekend, 6-4 on Friday. No, I was 4-6 on Friday. You were 6-4 on Friday, by the way.
Was it? I don't even remember who I picked.
You're on a roll. See, I gotta do your, I gotta update your standings.
I gotta be close to 500 now.
You're getting there. You're awful close. I gotta figure out where it's at. But yeah, you've been awful good lately. You've been reliable.
Reliable. How about that?
Let's see. You're 10-7 in your last two days.
Wow.
Pick it. I'm at 155, 131, and 6 on the year. I'm slipping a little bit backwards, but got some cushion because of my role, so I'm hoping to get back on the roll. The big problem is I'm talking myself out of things that I know better, and then sometimes I'm also – we've hit that part of the season where weird stuff just starts happening because the guys are in the ruts.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way Toronto should have won that game last night, even with Kobe coming back and, like, all the problems there. Like, the Lakers should have smoked them at home on a Sunday. Well, should have smoked them.
You let Amir Johnson beat you.
Give Amir Johnson a chance. How many Raptors get traded this week? Over, under 1.5?
Over.
Over. Okay.
Lowry will get dealt with
somebody. Immediate fire
sale. Yeah.
Here's another question. Does Dwayne Casey make it this week?
I think Dwayne Casey will make it through the season.
You think they're going to keep him?
I think so.
I think, talking to people in Toronto, it sounds like it was either they were gonna fire Casey or they were gonna make the fire sale, and now they're kind of like, we're not gonna make the fire sale and then fire Dwayne and blame it on him. That's not fair.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think Casey most likely makes it through the season unless they like lose 20 in a row at some point.
Yeah.
And then just for appearances, you fire the coach. Or you assign him to do daily reports.
Is Terrence Jones? Do you think Terrence Jones is good yet, or are you still not believing?
I think he works right now with what they need him to do. I don't know that he's good. I don't know that it's been enough games to be like, yep, this guy gets it. But I love the way he's playing.
Gotta be. Is he on the year and a half list?
No. That's just for shooters. Oh, no, I need like 3 months of solid play.
I'm so worried DeMar DeRozan's gonna fall off a cliff now because I realized it's so much. I watched it last night and I realized that so much of it was that they were worried about Rudy Gay.
He's teetering a little bit.
I was like, no, it doesn't happen. No, DeRozan.
He's down to what, 35% on the year, which isn't bad. I mean, that's league average, right? So you'll take league average out of what DeRozan has been throughout his career. But
he's gonna have to do so much with the ball.
Oh, he's teetering. So much. They gotta trade him, right?
I don't know.
I know you and I are split on this. In terms of the contract,
here's the deal: the $10 million. Here's the deal. The problem is that if they wait and he gets better, he's in that Gallo range of really good player on a $10 million a year deal. And those $10 million guys, if you're under 11, are really easy to move.
Yeah.
Like, I guess here's the thing. Yes, they should move him, but they should move him. Like, he has so much trade value, they almost can't.
He signed through 2017. It's manageable too, but I don't know. That's a big commitment.
That's the thing, though, is like it's if he improves, if his improvement holds up, then he's above replacement shooting guard for $10 million a year.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's like,
I guess that position is so weak right now.
Yeah, it's not Aaron Aflalo, right?
Right.
But I mean, that's the thing with the Magic have to be in where they're like, he has so much trade value, we can't move.
Oh, that's another guy that needs to get dealt.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys in that situation with the bad teams where they're so good they can't get. Like Jameer Nelson needs to get moved because Jameer Nelson, he does nothing for their future and can help out a team.
Yeah, and he's also not guaranteed next year.
Like, I'm the last person on the Darren Collison. It's not even a train at this point. It's a little kiddie wagon with one wheel busted off. But even I'm like, man, how much of an upgrade would Jameer be over Darren Collison?
Ooh,
like,
that Jameer would be off the bench. That would be huge.
You can run two guard lineups with Paul. Like, yeah. It gives them so many options.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys like that. Like, I made fun of him so much in Boston. He's got issues defensively. I really like how Glenn Davis is playing right now.
Yeah, I don't mind him on a contender as a backup.
Like, if he was in, and that's the thing is the Magic don't need a Sheik. That's the other problem with the Sheik, right? Is a Sheik, he can only go to a contender.
Yeah, I mean the rumors about him going to Philly are confusing. I wrote up the newser about Mark Stein's report about Philly's interest in Ashik, and the three trade scenarios I came up with were Ashik and a first, protected first for Thad Young, Ashik for Evan Turner, or Ashik for Spencer Hawes. And the more I thought about Spencer Hawes on the Rockets, I was like, ooh, I kind of like that.
Yeah.
He would fit nicely with Dwight. He can shoot threes. He's a passer. Like I think that would be a cool fit, but why? I mean, I guess just other than like a potential, like Hinkie is just fascinated with him, with Ashik, and loves his potential. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me if they're not getting a first round pick.
I think it goes like this. So what's going on down there, Daryl? He's really upset. He's totally ruined his trade value. He won't play. He's mad at the team. He's just so unhappy. He's a locker room cancer right now. Locker room cancer, you say? $49.95. Sold.
He walked right into the Philly locker room, and Hinkie's like, you see that skinny little rookie over there? Why don't you go punch him in the face?
Like, before he gets there, he's like, we're really glad to have you, Omer. We're really happy that you're here. Not the players so much. They all think you suck.
Nobody wants to pass to you.
I mean, I'm not saying that they made a bunch of Turkish slurs. But I'm not saying they didn't make a bunch of Turkish slurs. But it's a real concern for us. You know, I just want you to know we're not a part of that. We love you.
Here's this list of things about Turkish people they may or may not have said. You decide what's there.
This is a BuzzFeed post that Evan Turner wrote. If you're from Turkey, by the way, we don't have any issues with you.
No, I couldn't.
We're just saying theoretically the Sixers do.
No, I love what's that guy's name? Gollum? Not Gollum from like Lord of the Rings crap, but I think there was a shooting guard on their national team named like Gollum or something like that. And I love that guy. He reminded me of a Manu Ginobili-esque player. It's possible I'm missing his name completely, but I feel like you'll get who I'm talking about.
You know, the general guy. He's got he feels like a golem.
Yeah, he's got no hair. He's, I don't know, 6'5"-ish. He might have worn number 5. Just let that ruminate in your head a little bit. You know I like you.
By the way, before we go, Udonis Haslam is opening a Subway restaurant today.
Oh, how about that?
He owns one.
Get your $5 footlongs that may or may not be dropped on the floor.
I'm sorry, Thursday is when he's opening it. So you got a couple days.
Well, now I've got time to get there.
All right. To go down for the opening.
Yeah.
We should pitch that. I'm sure.
Hey.
I'm sure our editors would just jump at that.
I could just say, hey, look, it's minus 22 degrees here. I could go to Miami and get a Subway sandwich. And you don't even need to give me the per diem. Just fly me there. I'll find my own room and board. I know people in Miami. Just let me have this one.
Just let me have this one. I'll write about the sandwich. It'll be great.
Yeah. We'll get a sponsorship deal. It'll work.
Okay, so you're coaching some 8th grade. Are you going to teach him the Nick Young shot?
Oh, that's the only – we have practice tonight, and that's the only thing I'm going to teach him is go baseline, spin. Which is
go funny. Baseline, spin, step 3, success.
Which is funny because like our big man tries to do this right-handed reverse every time he goes to the basket, and I had to tell him – I just told him like during the last game, I was like, I don't ever want to see that reverse out of you again because it gets blocked every time because it just doesn't work. I was like, I just
– My friend – when I was in 8th grade, my friend Mark, that's the same thing. He was like a power forward. He would do the exact same thing. He always wanted to go to that reverse. Where I was like, why do you do that?
Yeah, and like you just have to teach this kid how to be physical and big. He's like, and he's a big, like he's just a tall kid. Like he could dominate at the level, and he's skilled too. So it's like I see that shot and I get frustrated. I told him you can't do that, but it's gonna be weird when I tell him today. Like, hey, when you go baseline, spin.
Not just once.
He's like, okay, so like hit him with a spin move. Like, no, jump in the air then spin.
Teach him ballet. We need an outro. How do we get out of this?
Nick Young, spin us out.
Thanks, Zach.